It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We made a prediction on Thursday, or it was Wednesday, actually. And I like to see how we did, because I honestly don't remember how we did. We all predicted how many targets Malik Nabers would have on Sunday. Because remember, Malik was targeted at like a 70% clip week two against Washington. So we had a nice discussion about, you know, is it going to be that high? What's it going to look like? So let's see how we did. Let's start off with Tiki Barber's prediction on how many targets Malik Nabers was going to have on Sunday against the Cleveland Browns.
Sunday afternoon against the Cleveland Browns, how many targets will Malik Nabers have?
15.
15?
You're writing it down?
Yes, I'm writing it down, Tiki. I'm also playing the audio. 15, okay? Tommy Lugauer, how many targets will Malik Nabers have?
Lugie?
11.
11. Morash?
Are we allowed to double up?
What does that mean?
Because I'm really angry because my number was 11.
Okay.
And it's based on the fact that I think after last week, with the way the Giants got gashed on the run and knowing the Browns' pass rush, I think the Giants are going to try to control the clock and run the hell out of the ball.
Oh, interesting. You have every right to copy Lugie's number.
By
the way, you both get victory cigars if you win.
Well, guess what? They both get victory cigars because they both said 11. The answer was 12. You guys were the closest. I was way off. Here's my prediction.
I'm going with 6. Okay.
I went with a very low
what
number.
What a troll.
Well,
6.
I wasn't trolling. I thought that they weren't going to need to target him that many times. And honestly, most of those targets came in the first half of this game.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't had a chance to watch the All-22. I'd like to see what Cleveland did differently. Yeah. Maybe Denzel Ward had something to do with that in the second half.
Please make sure you watch the All-22 before Friday's pick segment.
Can you I'm going to watch All-22 tonight. All right, I got no baseball tonight.
Good.
I get a little respite from the Mets and the Yankees. Though I do have a huge Diamondback Giant game I've got to keep an eye on.
It's respite.
Yeah, that's what I said.
I thought you said breast spit.
No, I didn't. Breast spit. What, where's your mind right now?
That's what it sounded like to me.
I said respite. So congratulations to Tommy and Sean. You guys share the victory in correctly predicting that Malik Nabers would get 11 or 12 targets.
Repetitive Tommy. More power to you, bro.
Now, speaking of repetitive Tommy, you have issues with Brian Daboll's coaching in the second half yesterday?
Sure do.
Go ahead.
And it's hard for me to buy into this team because, once again, the head coach was the cowardly lion because after the turnover on downs in the fourth quarter, run, then you lose 4 yards, then you run again, and then you send a kicker who was on the couch like the rest of us last week out there to kick a 48-yard field goal. So we're going to have a quick little game show here. Sean, you're the contestant. Door number one or door number two, your choice.
Okay, door number two.
Door number two, the head coach is an idiot. You want to know what door number one was?
What?
Door number one is he's tanking. Because that is a head coach that is trying to lose on purpose.
Tommy, you're wrong.
Sean,
that's coaching to win.
No, it is not.
Yeah,
it is coaching scared. Either you are not good at your job or you are purposely trying to lose games because you are comfortable and you realize you need to draft a quarterback. Because once again, he's coming up with these decisions with the kickers to lose games. Now, he got bailed out in this game because you're playing the Browns and Deshaun Watson, who's a bottom three quarterback in the NFL. He is hideous. And he got bailed out. So I'd love to hear your explanation here because to me, he's either a moron or he's tanked.
Last week, when Graham Gano was hurt and we all crushed Brian Daboll for the kicking situation, did the Giants or did they not bring in multiple kickers despite already having one on the practice squad to work out? Just start with that, yes or no?
Sean, fine, yes.
Okay. Did this kicker, Greg Joseph, hit not one, not two, but three extra points in that long 38-yard distance type?
I don't care if he's sending out Justin Tucker for 48 yards. Be aggressive. Go for the win. Now, he's not Justin Tucker. He's a guy who didn't have a job a week ago.
And I know Evan agrees with you. Guys, in the NFL, I don't care if you were on your couch a week ago. If you were good enough to play in the NFL and good enough to kick on a clear September day, it is your job to hit a 46-yarder, and it is your job as a head coach when you need a field goal to seal the win to make sure you have the best possible situation to put that field goal. That's what he did. I can't kill Daboll for that.
Is Brian Daboll's job security tied to a quarterback?
Dude, we spent Monday. Yes, I guess. But we spent Monday killing the idea that the Giants not having a kicker killed them and Brian Daboll screwed up the whole kicker situation. Now, in theory, they do have a kicker. He coached like he had a kicker. Am I going to kill him for that? I can't kill him for that.
So you're asking me if I agree with Tommy?
Yeah.
I partially agree with Tommy. I think he's just taking it too far. I don't think Brian Daboll's an idiot, nor do I think he's tanking, but I disagreed with running with Devin Singletary three straight times at the Cleveland 29-yard line. I disagree with it. I would have dialed up at least one aggressive play to not settle for a 48-yard field goal. So I'm with him in terms of the argument. I'm not with him in terms of either he's tanking, which is not the case, and you know that, bro. And I don't think he's an idiot. I just don't think he was aggressive enough with at least one of those plays. Like, here's what I'll give you. Can I give you this? First of all, you want to run on first down because they only had two timeouts left. Okay, fine. When you get stymied and now it's second and long, and they're playing the run
right
to the point where when you ran with Devin on second down, he got stopped for a negative 3-yard loss.
Okay.
I probably see that and say, all right, I'm going to dial up a pass play. They got one timeout left. Let me see if I can get a chunk of yards here.
And what if Myles Garrett sacks him and knocks him out of field goal range?
What if? What if a lot of bad things happen?
Are you playing it safe to kick the field goal? I don't have a problem with that.
Or, Sean, what if Devin Singletary loses 3 yards like he did, and now you're settling for nearly a 50-yard field goal? What if? Both aren't good, bro.
Dude.
Like, it was too conservative in terms of that play call. So I do agree with him that I didn't like that, but that was the only thing I didn't like from the second half. If you look at the rest of the second half play calling, I think Brian Daboll was aggressive. I think his players didn't execute.
Yeah,
there were bad penalties. There were missed throws by Daniel. So I think that I don't think the second half was literally, let's climb into a hole and wait for the clock to run out. I don't think that's a fair criticism.
No, and I think a good defense stepped up like the Browns. Guys, there's one thing you could criticize Brian Daboll for, and neither of you have mentioned it yet.
In the game or just in one specific moment?
Go ahead. And it almost lost them the game.
Go ahead.
We are in year two of Eric Gray. He's not a return man. He stunk last year dropping punts left and right. He can't hold on to the football. And there he is. I understand that they have gone to Gunnar Olszewski out. How is he your primary option to return kicks? He stinks. He fumbled the kick, and it led to an immediate 7-0 lead. And thank God the Giants came back, because that's the thing to kill Brian Daboll about. Eric Gray is not a return man. Stop making him something he's not.
And he came.
I'm not a Pilates instructor. Nobody would have me do that. I mean, come on.
Then, can someone explain to me then why these decisions by the head coach are being made? Is he an idiot? Is he comfortable? So what is it? Is he an idiot? Is he comfortable? Or is he tanking?
Hold on. Why do you have to be so hyperbolic?
Because, Evan, this is
a football discussion. No. Like, it's just a disagreement on... Like,
because he's getting a pass. It's been 2 years of this.
Tommy.
Yes.
Take a deep breath, okay? This is what's so interesting. We're all... Like, I'm on Tommy's side for the most part, but he's nuking it. Like, he took the nuclear bomb out and said, he's either an idiot or you fire him! It's just a difference in opinion on how you handle a first and 10 from the Cleveland 29. I don't think it has to be as hyperbolic as he's an idiot or he's tanking. Why do you have to go that far with it?
Because every week, or seemingly every single week, dating back to last year, there are decisions being made by Brian Daboll that I disagree with. And I'm just trying to get answers.
But Tommy, in the first half of this game, you would agree that Brian Daboll reminded us, me and you, of the guy that we liked from 2 years ago.
He did.
They were very aggressive on a fourth down play. They had a beautiful play call, a sweep to Malik Nabers, got the ball in the hands of the best player, and we saw Brian Daboll's, as you put it.
Yes.
So focus on this specific game, not 2 weeks ago, because we could re-argue all of our disagreements from the Jet-Giant game. In terms of yesterday, the only thing to me, I mean, you bring up the Eric Gray thing, that's fine. I get that. He puts the ball on the ground, get him out. But why are you going all so nuts about it? It's just a football disagreement.
But if I come home and I do the four things my wife asked me to do, but I didn't do the fifth one that really annoys her, then I'm still the same lazy schlub that she regrets marrying. Now, I'm using that. She doesn't regret marrying me, but you get my idea.
You're microing this too much. Okay. Were the Giants, and I know we don't care about points, but we do, were the Giants nearly a touchdown underdog in Cleveland yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Were we not coming off Brian Daboll being asked after 2 weeks about job security? Down 7-0 on the road versus a good defense. Did Brian Daboll, with his play calling, not give Daniel Jones all the confidence, Malik Nabers, and go for it on that fourth down? Brian Daboll coached a game yesterday that is worth applauding. They won a football game nobody thought was coming, and a lot of it was due to his coaching.
I agree with him on that. Like, I think overall, like, especially the play calling, which we now know he is a part of, Brian Daboll did a great job yesterday. Disagreeing how you handle that final possession, like, we disagree. I don't think it has to be, he's either an idiot or he's tanking.
I know.
Like, why does it have to be that extreme?
Pick door number one or pick door number two?
I mean, it's how about this? It's neither door, bro. Yeah. He's not tanking. He's not an idiot. He just got really conservative on that final drive, maybe because he had way too much optimism in Greg Joseph, which I wouldn't have had.
I'm being an investigative reporter, maybe even a detective, and I'm following the bouncing ball here, and I see a head coach who literally had his feet up on Hard Knocks and coaches like he's comfortable, like he's tanking.
How is that?
He doesn't want this quarterback. He is married to Daniel Jones. He wants him out of here.
You don't think he called good plays for his quarterback yesterday?
I think in the second half of that game, when it mattered
the most, you're wrong about
he got
that.
Scared again.
I'll tell you why.
And sent the kicker out there to kick a 48-yarder that was out of a job
last
week.
So the New York Giants had the football seven different possessions in the second half. Okay? That's a fact. There's no disagreeing with that. Seven different possessions. Okay? One of those possessions, I agree with you. I didn't like how conservative he was. If you go through the other six possessions, and I dare you to because you'll be proven wrong, show me where Brian Daboll coached scared. Because he didn't. Because let's go through how each position ended. First possession of the second half ended because Devin Singletary put the ball on the ground. Okay?
Yeah.
The second possession ended because Daniel Jones missed Malik Nabers and missed a pass to him. And then there was a false start on Andrew Thomas. And then there was a high snap on third and long
right.
in which they also had an ineligible man downfield.
Right. And Jones did a great job by that in the way. But
I call that lack of execution.
Yeah.
Okay? On the third possession, they had a second and eight that got blown up because he got sacked. And by the way, it was untouched. Whoever sacked him, I actually forget who it was, came in completely untouched.
I think that was Za'Darius Smith.
On the next possession, he almost threw an interception at Denzel Ward. Daniel Jones didn't execute.
Did.
I don't see play calls where he was conservative. I see the quarterback and this offense not executing. So I think it's lazy is a mean word. I was about to call you Brian because you look right. like Brian Daboll.
Thank you.
Lazy is a mean word. Because I know you watch every Giant game and every Giant play. There's nothing about the play calling until the final possession, which we agree with, that shows me the Giants got conservative and went into a cocoon. And by the way, I just showed you because I gave you examples. So now I'll give it to you. Without mentioning the field goal possession that we agree on, show me where he got conservative. I'll hang up and listen.
I'll show you examples throughout last year and yesterday with the game on the line, guys. He coaches conservatively and
game,
scared.
But Luke, I said the game yesterday.
But Evan, I don't care what they did.
You just said Evan, the second half Evan, he coached scared.
Evan.
Did he say that, Sean?
In the NFL, the difference between winning and losing, the Rams beat the Niners yesterday, so anybody could beat anybody. You have to execute and be aggressive when the game is on the line. When the game is on the line, his idea was to send out Greg Joseph
to kick
a 48-yard field goal on the road.
We agree on that last possession, me and you. I'm with you, okay? On the six other possessions in the second half, did he coach scared?
What good would... No.
I'm asking you a question.
No.
Okay, so I
but
win.
What
Thank
good
you.
Would, okay, you right. win. But the bottom line is that I want an answer to why this head coach makes these decisions. And I haven't been able to get an answer of this. He's either comfortable because he knows he has a job.
Stop saying that.
They won the game. It's a victory Monday. We may only get three or four of these all year long. Can we enjoy the damn win?
No, because...
Tommy,
no.
we're worried about Dable and tanking. Everyone just shut up.
No.
All the callers. Can we just enjoy a win?
No, because
we never win. We finally won. Right. Enjoy the win.
You're going to be Randy Bullock. Because Shoho should be in shape, too. By the way, if we're going to come on the air, Sean, and be critical of the Jets and Robert Saleh after wins, then I have to be fair and be critical of the head coach.
Right. So then, you know what? The way you wanted him to coach, then he did a great job in week two because you don't even want the kicker existing.
No,
so, as far as I'm concerned, credit him for that.
No, that's another bad mark on his case because he once again...
We get it. You don't like Daboll, you want Belichick here. We got it.
I definitely don't want... I'd rather have Joe Judge for the next 20 years than Bill Belichick.
We got it.
Okay, fine.
You're like a dog on a fire,
okay.
Hydrant.
All right. You want to wave the pom-poms and spin it, then be my guest.
Coach of the year, and he's on his
but
way to
But somebody else needs to point out the other things with this football team that everyone else is seeing. Oh, that's it.
Said a lot of things to each other that I started writing down because I want to remember them, including Sean saying, quote, Brian Daboll's on his way to another coach of the year. In case anyone picked up on that.
He might be.
Okay. I like to jot things down. I like to have things in memories. Let's get back to your calls. 888-808.
Jeez, they won the game, guys.
Go out there and rip that son of a bitch.
First of all, I defended him. Did you not listen to what I said?
I know.
The play calling in the second, because here's the thing, and this is why I appreciate what Tommy did. I do appreciate you, bro. He represents a lot of Giant fans who were saying that last night. The Giants kind of got conservative in the second half. They kind of were playing not to lose. And what I'm saying to you is outside of the field goal drive, which I completely agree with you on, right? So put that aside. I just argued with Sean about that first. Like, I'm with you on that. I think you guys are dead wrong that he got conservative. And I just gave you the specific examples of it. It was lack of execution on various people. A lot of it, the quarterback. Some of it, penalties.
I thought initially when I went to bed, as a matter of fact, I taped the whole podcast ripping Dable. And upon second watch, I was wrong.
Yeah, it's just not true. Like, that's not what happened in the second half of this game. What happened in the second half of this game, in terms of why they didn't score and they didn't put long drives together, is that they didn't execute as well as they did in the first half. It's just sometimes it's as simple as that. It's not necessarily on the coach. The field goal drive, I'm with you on. I would have been much more conservative than running it with Devin Singletary three times in a row to kill time and rely on a Greg Joseph 48-yard field goal. Me and you, simpatico.
Enjoy the win. I'm enjoying the win. Victory Monday. But the win to me after the game yesterday, I felt like the win masked a lot of the same problems. The quarterback wasn't bad in the second half. The quarterback was hideous in the second half. If he throws that interception and they don't call a bogus pass, roughing the passer in the first half, the game's totally different. Giants go down 14-0. I'm just pointing out the negative.
I'm sorry. This is completely irrelevant to what you're saying. I'm going to ask a very nice question. I'm going to ask this so nicely. Can Politico stop texting me? All right.
Oh, no.
Stop. I mean, why is Donald Trump Jr. texting me right now?
Why does he
I just got a text message from him, and before that, I got one from Walls. I mean, why are they texting me? They don't even know who I am. Why are you texting me?
Justin Jefferson.
Both of you, stop it. I get it. The other side's idiots. I know. My phone blows up. I think my wife's texting me an emergency. Meanwhile, the governor of Minnesota's telling me to...
Harry, get your fat ass out of the couch.
As long as they're texting, you asked Tim Walls if he would have kicked the field goal from 46 yards out.
He was a coach, so maybe I should ask him. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Andrew in Brooklyn. What's up, Andrew?
How are you? Morash couldn't be any more wrong about the Giants' performance yesterday in the second half.
Hold on.
And I am not a Daniel Jones supporter, but he did play very well yesterday. But there is no top team in the NFL. It's not 10 years ago, where you can run, kick field goals. One Gray should not be back there. Everyone agrees on that, finally. You can't go run, field goals, especially with a kicker who was cut or not even on the team. But more important than that, how many, and this is where, Evan, I think you're wrong.
Go ahead.
We punt from the 40-yard line more than any team in the NFL, and our punter never downs it inside the 10.
We are
gaining 20 yards every series for the last 2 years. I'm sick and tired of punting from the 40 or 45-yard line, and with our defense, within three plays, guess where they are? On our 40-yard line again, and you get no possessions. I'm sick and tired of Dable. He hasn't been aggressive since he went for the two-point conversion. We loved him for that, and it's only been down.
Okay, but we got to be fair, so let's go specifics on this. God. They punted twice from Cleveland territory, and I would defend both cases. Number one was a 4th-and-8 from the Cleveland 42 right after Ojulari forced the fumble, okay? Is that really a time with 5 minutes to go, and you've got a 4th-and-8, and your offense has been clunky in the second half? Is that really the moment to go for it? The answer is no. The problem is Jamie Gillen's got to do a better job of punting. That's number one. Number two, the other time of record that I have, I can look back further, where they punted in Cleveland territory was a 4th-and-15 from the 50.
Yeah.
I mean, or from the Cleveland 49. You're not doing that.
Of course.
You're not. So I understand that frustration, but here's the thing. Show me the scenarios. I'll always show you the other scenarios where I rip the head coach. But in the second half of this game, those scenarios didn't exist. I, though, agree with our last caller, and I agree with Tommy. I did not like playing for a field goal. I'm sorry, Sean. I know it bothers you. This is where we're going to disagree. I don't like running into the ground with Devin Singletary. I don't like it.
A good coach plays to the situation, understands where his team is at. Daniel Jones was not good in the second half. Daniel Jones' throws were erratic in the second half. And Brian Dable thought the trust was we were close enough in field goal range. Run, kick the field goal. Let's get out of here. Win the game. It backfired. The kicker missed the kick. I still proclaim, I don't care if you were on your couch a week ago. That's a kick every NFL kicker needs to make.
Mark and Syosset. What's up, Mark?
Good afternoon, guys. I completely disagree with what Tommy was talking about before. Dable's not an idiot. Dable did a great job yesterday. He put Daniel Jones in a great position in that first half. Calling plays that got rid of the ball quickly. They played very well. They won the game. Let's everybody calm down. Sean is absolutely right. Let's enjoy the fact we won a game that we are a 6.5-point underdog.
And we don't even get a full week to enjoy it.
Credit where it deserves.
Yeah.
What's that? Dallas, I missed it.
I said we don't even get a full week to enjoy it either, which hurts.
No, no, you got to go right to Dallas.
Dallas going to come right to us.
No, but I mean right to Dallas in terms of thinking about the Cowboys, not to Dallas.
Yeah.
Obviously, the game is at home. I know Tiki's going to the game. Are you going to the game?
I was asked by somebody about a half an hour ago, do you want to go to the game? I'm looking at dirt cheap tickets. I have declined the tickets.
Why? Because the Yankees Orioles?
No.
You guys are going to wrap it up before that?
I hope it's not there.
Because of Mets Braves?
I'm scared, Ev.
What are you scared of?
I don't want to walk out of there after a couple Daniel Jones picks and losing to the Cowboys.
Okay. Hold on a second.
I'm being honest with you.
Now, this is
I have Cowboy scars from these home games.
Sean, this is where you and Tommy, I know you've had some issues today. It's been a lot of fighting today. I've had many say this should have already been a Lugash debate series. I totally get that. Maybe another day. Tommy used to say the same thing. Tommy would not want to go. Now, don't give me that look, bro. You know your history.
No. I was giving you credit. That was a giving you credit look.
Oh, thank
that
you. I appreciate it. Tommy used to be afraid to go to Mets-Yankees games. Refused to go.
Refused.
Would not go for the exact reason you gave. He's like, I know how it's going to end. This was before Positive Tommy was born. I know how it's going to end. Those Yankee fans, they're just so mean. I'm not doing it. And I would always argue with him. And I wasn't even being positive. I would say, listen, Tommy, you may be right. I mean, I don't know what the hell's going to happen. But let's say you're wrong. Let's say the Mets win. Like, that feeling of leaving Yankee Stadium a victor is totally worth it. So as much as I may be negative with my teams, I'm never afraid to show up. Whether it's Knicks, Nets, and 97% of the fans are Knicks fans. I always go. So if you aren't going to go Thursday night because, hey, I'm a sports talk radio host, Mets Braves is going to be a big deal, totally respect that. If you're not going because your wife put the foot down and said, nope, not on a Thursday night.
I never even broached it with her, but she would be more than willing to let me go.
But I would get all those excuses. Your excuse for not going to Giants-Cowboys can't be, I'm afraid. Can't be.
It is. I'm sorry.
Dude.
It is. I have scars. Giants have to prove they can beat the Dallas Cowboys before I ever go to another Giant-Cowboy game again. I'm 0 for like my last 18 Giant-Cowboy
games. But what if they win on Thursday and you're not there?
Guess what? When I have my honey bunches of oats and record a podcast at 1:30 in the morning, I'll feel great about the win nonetheless. By the way, I'm in a big honey bunches of oats kick. Very good cereal.
Yeah. I should bring that in. I've been going on a cereal kick myself, but I have not gone on honey bunches of oats.
The bunches are where it's good.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a food question real quick?
Sure.
So we have this beautiful...
Step on my couch.
Thank you. We have this beautiful deli right near where we work, and I've been starting to use it lately. Like, I'm going to go get a sandwich.
All right.
I'm a weird sandwich guy. I don't like anything on my sandwiches. Just turkey, the cheese, that's it. No mustard, no mayonnaise, no lettuce, no tomato, nothing. I'm a plain guy.
Okay.
So I've gone down there a couple of times. Guys are very nice guys. All those guys down there. And I will order turkey and cheese. You want lettuce? No. You want a tomato? No. Every single time they ask me, and I appreciate them asking me, I feel like they think I'm weird because I'm getting looks of like, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah, I'm sure. And they ask me a couple of times in a row, and I'm like, no, let me make it clear.
It's not
turkey,
that.
Cheese, nothing else.
As a former sandwich artist myself, I could tell you the truth is they're looking out for you as the consumer and customer. Because they don't dictate the prices in the place, the bosses do.
Right.
And you are going to get charged the same amount of money just for turkey and cheese as you would if you packed four different toppings.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Things on there. So they want to make sure when they say you sure four times, they're going to feel bad writing $11.75 on a sandwich that probably would only really cost $4 because you're not getting a bunch of stuff on it.
Yeah, but they don't have to look out for me. I know what I want.
But they are. So give them credit for looking out for
me. No, I appreciate that. But listen, I know I'm paying for tomatoes. I don't want tomatoes.
Give me the meat. So I want the meat.
They don't think you're weird. They just want to make sure you're sure. Because, you know, how many other, you know the way people are. There's five other Evan Roberts out there. The other five all complaining. Can you believe you're charging me this much for the sandwich? All I got was turkey and cheese.
Well,
not their fault.
I got a great idea to make this fair. Then all give right. me extra meat. That seems fair.
Double the meat.
Double the meat.
Yeah, double the meat.
If they're not, they don't have the authority to do that.
If they feel bad that I'm paying so much money for a sandwich that doesn't include lettuce and tomato, give me more meat.
They need that meat authority.
Do you know the markup on meat compared to lettuce?
It's probably significant,
come on,
isn't it?
Man.
Damn inflation.
You were a sandwich maker.
Yeah,
in some
artist,
ways, Evan insulting them? Like, their job is to make the sandwich. They probably take a lot of pride
of
in the toppings. New York City, we're all about our sandwiches. By Evan going in there and just ordering, you know, meat and cheese basically on bread, is that insulting to the guys behind the counter there?
Yeah, I mean, it would be like Evan leading a show with pickleball. You know, it's just take a little pride in your work.
Throw a little lettuce on there, is my point.
Have I ever done that yet?
We came close.
Last night, after the New York Giants defeated the Cleveland Browns, I got in my car, I took my oldest son, and we drove to Citi Field, and it was very emotional because I didn't know if I was going back again this season. I still don't know if I'm going back this season. And I was explaining the scenarios to Jet, and as I was explaining the scenarios, it was even firmer in my head how important last night's Met game was. Very important. The difference between going to Atlanta with a one-game lead and very little margin for error as compared to going with a two-game lead, which is what they have, which Sean Morash and Tiki Barber correctly predicted.
That's right.
I asked everybody on Friday, what will the scenario be on Monday? And both said it's going to be the same. The Mets are going to be up two. And you guys were right. The Mets won two out of three after winning the opener on Thursday. The Braves won two out of three. I was wrong. I thought the Mets were going to lose two out of three. The Braves were going to sweep, and they were going to be tied. Lugie was even wronger because he had the Mets winning every game, the Braves losing every game, and this thing essentially being over. So he was wrong, I was wrong, and you two were very, very right.
That's right.
But going into last night's game at Citi Field, I didn't know you guys were going to be right. And I wasn't very confident. And all year long, I have matched Tommy's positivity with my fear that something bad is going to happen. And I can't lie to you. I still fear something bad is going to happen.
You got
in
scores.
Atlanta. I got major scores, and I'm thankful that they've set themselves up by winning three or four from Philadelphia, six of seven on this homestand, and being in a spot, which if you don't know, it's very simple. If the Mets win two out of three, they've clinched a playoff spot. Period. Stop. Good night. See you later. They're a playoff team.
Unbelievable.
If they lose two out of three, they still leave Atlanta with everything right in front of them. They would have they'd have a one-game lead. They would not have the tiebreaker, which means they've got to maintain that one-game lead, and they've got to hold off the Braves having a better weekend against Kansas City than the Mets would have against the Brewers. That's a toss-up. Who the hell knows what happens? Obviously, getting swept is the doomsday scenario, but it's the scenario I fear because we saw it 2 years ago. It ain't that far removed from that.
Yeah.
But the one thing that really hit me as I sat there last night, and I was bougie as all hell. I was sitting in crazy good seats, which is a rarity. I'll go back to my season tickets for the postseason, assuming there is postseason. But as I sat there with my wonderful son, I realized something. Something I've always realized. Something I've always said. But something that's worth repeating. I hate this. I hate pennant races.
Yeah.
I hate my team being good because I was miserable for 2.5 hours.
And you were tweeting through it too last night. Oh, I hate this. Tight games. This, that.
I tweeted once. I said I hate this.
I feel like it was multiple times.
That's all.
Neither here nor there. The bottom line is
maybe
Evan.
I texted you guys. Evan, I hate this a few times.
We all in the moment hate the Agita, but you gotta embrace the Agita.
Yeah.
In the final home game of the year, the Mets flexed the prime time versus the Philadelphia Phillies. Held, and their pitching held up as Wheeler was mowing down the Mets until Nimmo hit that home run. That's what it's all about.
No,
baby.
I understand they won.
That's why you pay the thousands of dollars you do and make no resale when they can't sell out a game. They can't sell them. It's for that moment last night.
No, you're right. In the moment, it's awful. That's all I'm saying. In the like, as I sit here right now and I talk about the experience of being at Citi Field on Sunday night and the experience of being Citi Field a lot this season and watching the evolution of a baseball team that had nobody going to games, no energy in the ballpark to what we're witnessing now. Dude, it's amazing. Yeah. And it's fun to talk about it from that standpoint. But in the moment, like when Edwin Diaz, and this is the part that like there's so many things that I can't get out of my head.
Oh.
But when Edwin Diaz strikes out JT Realmuto, and Bryson Stott is stealing third base, and Francisco Alvarez makes the throw to third,
oh,
to which I'm reacting, screw it, don't even throw to third base. Like, what are you doing at this point? Don't even throw to third base. There's two outs. And that ball hits the third base bat and plops into the air. I wanted it to disappear from the earth. I was like, are you freaking kidding me? This is how the Phillies are going to tie the game? But as that ball hit the third base bag and stayed close enough, I thought to myself, are we starting to get the breaks now?
You've been getting them all year.
Well, I wouldn't say all year. Francisco Lindor is out with a back issue.
Oh, no,
I wouldn't call that a break.
Not everything's a break.
Kodai Senga has barely pitched this year. I wouldn't call that a break, okay?
But they've
so don't
had,
spare me on breaks.
You know that they've had a few of these moments all year where you're expecting the worst, and the worst doesn't happen.
But a lot of times when I'm expecting the worst, they have been the team to overcome it. They've earned that. That little plop. It's very similar, and I think
how we get
wrote,
a better throw too.
What was that?
Could we get a better
throw? I don't think he should have thrown. And look, Edwin Diaz needs to clean up holding guys on base because they just free ran him all over the place. We saw that in the eighth inning too when Trey Turner did that, and then obviously we saw it in the ninth inning with Bryson Stott and eventually Brandon Marsh, where they allowed the lead run to just trot over to second base. So that's on Edwin Diaz. He needs to do a better job of holding base runners on. But they've done a great job of being the team to overcome adversity. That was a break. Now, Edwin Diaz had to take advantage of it when he's facing Roger Clemens' son. That was the other thing. What? Are they going to let Roger Clemens' son stick it to us in game four of this series? The difference between a one-game lead and a two-game lead? But credit to Edwin Diaz. He overcame losing his control in the Brandon Marsh at-bat. He overcame not being able to hold anybody on base. He overcame walking Bryson Stott. And he was able to get those two enormous strikeouts to get out two and out three and get a six-out save.
And that's the other thing. Yeah, first six-out save coming off pitching on Saturday as well. Now, I know you got to get there and, you know, knock on wood, everything. Also gives you a little confidence if and when you're in the postseason here, Evan, that six-out save last night.
Well,
it gives him at least that confidence.
Yeah, look, there are very few guys that you can hand the baseball to get a six-out save, especially against who he was facing. He faced the Philadelphia Phillies with a one-run lead. He faced Kyle Schwarber and Trey Turner and Bryce Harper and Alec Boehm and like really good hitters with six outs with a one-run lead and no margin for error. And by the way, anytime he gave up a bloop hit to Trey Turner or a walk to Bryson Stott, the guy ends up on third base.
Right.
So every base hitter walk turns into essentially a triple. But he did an outstanding job. His season has completely turned from when he lost his closer's job to when he was suspended to obviously the Corbin Carroll Grand Slam. And the New York Mets, they've earned this, even though I may regret saying this. They have earned our trust going into Atlanta.
And
because at every turn this season, from 11 under to before that at 0-5, to obviously the adversities they've even faced recently with Francisco Lindor not playing, to the game against the Arizona Diamondbacks, where you, Sean, I give you credit. I give Loogie credit for being positive, but I don't know. He's very predictable now. Like, watch this. He's like a jukebox. How are the Mets going to do against the Braves this week?
Sweep them.
See what I'm saying?
Damage.
Damage. I listened to you. I was not on the air that day after Corbin Carroll hit the Grand Slam.
Me and Big Mac.
It was Sean Morash and Chris McMonagle. And I listened very carefully because I wanted to hear what they said. I wanted to hear if they were going to bury us or not. And Chris McMonagle did. He did. He said, the Mets are dead. That's what he said. He said, the Mets are dead. And you said, you know what, Chris? It was a horrible loss. They're not dead yet. And they responded. And in a lot of ways, the response from that Arizona game may be their most impressive response.
I agree.
Maybe their most impressive response is this. Francisco Lindor, the MVP, right?
Guess he's not anymore.
Hasn't played on this homestand.
Yeah.
And they went 6-1.
They've been galvanized since. Another meeting as well where Pete Alonso stepped up and spoke up. It's just incredible, Evan. Every which way you make this and this weekend, it's just incredible. And I'm gonna make a comp you're not going to like, but I do think it holds water. Because I'm speaking as an IBO for your team, right? I'm not a Met fan. You know what the Mets have done? They got a little nicks in them. And this is what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not a Met fan, even if you're not a Knick fan, this version of the Mets and this core of guys and this manager, a lot like the Jalen Brunson Knicks, damn, is it hard to hate them even if you don't like them.
I understand that.
I found myself, I'm telling you, last night, for all the Met hater, Nimmo hit the homer and I caught my wrist. I had to stop it. I did this fist pump action.
Look at you.
I kind of like this team. They're not hateable, which is very hard to do in a two team town.
No, I think that comparison is fair. I think the other comparison with the Knicks, not to the same level as the injuries and overcoming them.
Yeah.
You know, the Mets haven't been ravaged by injuries this season, but you think of Kodai Senga. He never plays. He comes back. He gets hurt again. He actually even got hurt the other day, so he's not going to come back for the end of the regular season. You think of Jeff McNeil, not the most important guy, but certainly an important guy. And obviously, the top of the list is Francisco Lindor. But here's the facts, and we'll spend a lot more time on this tomorrow. They got to win this series.
Mm-hmm.
On a lot of levels, they have to win this series. They have to, the final kind of exclamation point on OMG is to finish the job in Atlanta. They cannot miss the playoffs after all of this. Mm-hmm. They can't do it. If they do it, I'm sorry, it's going to ruin everything. Everything. It doesn't mean they don't have a future. It doesn't mean they don't have a great general manager. It doesn't mean Mendy hasn't done a wonderful job. It doesn't mean they may not sign Corbin Burns and Juan Soto, whatever free agent you want. I'm not saying their future is doomed, but they have a 2-game lead with 6 to go. It is all right there to beat an Atlanta Brave team. Now, they do have Ozzie Albies back, but still a Brave team that has faced their pieces of adversity this season. They've got their 3 best pitchers that they hand chose to pitch this series. They have got to, on so many levels, they've got to win this series. And not even, oh, well, they won a game, they've got the safety net.
No,
it's a safety net, but then you got to sweat out the weekend. Win 2 of 3. Beat the freaking Braves, win the series, clinch a playoff spot, we party, and we can analyze the playoffs at a later date. They've got to finish the job.
You've set me up perfectly, Evan, and I want to make an official WFAN Sports Radio proclamation.
Oh, God.
No, and I'm serious.
What?
Because this ties to all these fan bases in town. We have hit a very unreal week here. It's Ghostbusters week. It's Ghostbusters week if you turn against the fall.
Yeah, I get you.
Start first, very minimally, the Orioles have owned the Yankees this year so much so that they already have the tiebreaker.
They do not have the tiebreaker, but if they win a game, they would have the tiebreaker.
They currently hold it. You get the drift.
Okay. I'm just saying. It's 6-4 Orioles.
Ghostbusters.
I'm just giving you the facts here.
Fact checker.
Let's get the facts out of the way.
Yankees have handled everybody but the Orioles. Ghostbust them. The New York Mets.
Yes.
And everybody's so scared of the Atlanta Braves and you're all those scars. These Mets that have answered the bell all year, ghostbust them. And then, of course, you have Thursday night football with the Giants and Cowboys.
I agree with everything you said. I just have a problem with the way you ordered it. I think the Mets are the main event. I think the Giants you put second. Giants-Cowboys, it's a regular season game in September. Ghostbusted. I'm good with you on that. The capper is the Braves. That's the capper.
All right. I mean, potato, potato.
No. It's not potato, potato.
Basically have never beaten Dak Prescott and the Cowboys.
Sean, I totally get that. And I don't want to dismiss the Giant fan. And Lugie can probably best understand this as a Giant Met fan. You beat the Cowboys. That is great. And I'd be very happy for you. If the Mets win a series against the Braves, they finish the job.
Yeah.
Not that they eliminate them. They don't eliminate them technically because I think they have the tiebreaker on Arizona. I don't want to get in the weeds on that. But
All right. We
finish the job in terms of being a playoff team. And that, to me, is so important after what happened 2 years ago.
Let me couch this. You play 2 games versus the Braves before we ever get the Giants.
I understand.
So chronologically, the point is, all of these teams and all these fan bases and towns are staring at, some lesser than others,
I understand,
demons and antagonists.
I got you.
And spooky season is here with the fall.
I got
and
you.
It's Ghostbusters week. We ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Well, I am, but okay.
Well, and you teed me up, Evan.
Yes.
The Mets need this series against the Braves. The fans need it more.
We do.
There are a lot of skeletons in our closet that have Braves hats on it, right? This is a team that has haunted us for decades. There is a fear, especially in Atlanta. The fans need it, just like the Red Sox needed to get over that demon and that hump of the Yankees. And we know where that sent both franchises. The Mets and their fans need this series.
Yeah, they got to beat them.
Yeah.
They got to beat them. And look, I get, and this is why last night was so important, the Mets are in a position where they could lose 2 out of 3, and then win 3 straight against the Brewers and make the playoffs anyway. I fully understand every scenario, trust me. I've studied them. I get it. But I want it this way. And this way is going toe-to-toe in Atlanta, the site of the Demons from not just 2 years ago, but obviously our long history against them dating back to the 90s, and getting the job done.
You know what they need to be in Atlanta? Brave.
Okay. Okay, thank you for that. Now, one other thing, and we'll get to your calls. My man Pete Alonso. Pete Alonso had a relatively quiet weekend against the Philadelphia Phillies. He came up in a big spot Friday night with a chance to bring them back into the game. He came up small. He did get on base five times on Saturday with four walks and a bullpen. I don't want to ignore that. But I noticed something yesterday. And like I told you, I was sitting in very, very bougie seats. Very, 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 very bougie seats.
How much food you stuffed down your fat face?
I cannot begin to tell you. Okay. Actually, not as much as you'd think, because my priority was Jet. No, okay. It was Jet. And Jet is not a big eater. Like, Spence will eat anything. You know, our kids are very different.
Yep.
Spence would have gone to town on that place. Jet is very like, I don't like this, I like that. I really wanted him to go for it. So what I did is I starved him. I would not let him eat all day long, so that when he got there... You like that, right?
I do.
He would go to town, and my man went to town. He went chicken fingers.
How many?
Four.
All right.
He went strawberries. What? Big fat. Big strawberry guy. I know that's not fattening. I apologize.
My kids do the same thing.
He went.
So disappointing.
Pasta.
Fat.
Pasta primavera.
Fat.
Oh.
Pasta pesto.
Fat.
Ice cream.
Multiple pasta sauces and ice cream?
Yes.
Boy, that had to have been a floor at Rod home.
He had a very good time. So my priority was him, so I didn't eat as much as you'd imagine. I had a couple of hot dogs and ice cream, whatever. But I was very close to the action. And I noticed something about Pete Alonso. And you know I love Pete. Pete's my guy, okay? Pete Alonso got a standing ovation as he came to the plate in the bottom of the first inning.
Mm-hmm. And the ump had to tell him.
I had to tell him what?
You didn't see this?
No, did I see it? I'm sitting there. I'm staring at
him. Story today. The umpire had to tell Pete as he was digging the box, well, you're going to tip your cap or not. And Pete was oblivious to the fact that
he was... I interpreted that completely wrong. That's not how I took it.
Now, he was in the zone, Pete.
Nope. Now, I can be accused of fan fiction. Okay. So your story is the complete opposite from what I saw in the moment. And I'm going to tell you my story. And again, you guys watched it on TV. You could say, Evan, you're dead wrong. I thought Pete Alonso walked to the plate and could not wait to tip his hat. Like, he got to the plate like, I'm taking that hat off immediately. He could not wait to say thank you to the adulation that he was getting from Met fans. So what you
saw... I
love
being a Met.
...was very different than what I felt. I felt Pete couldn't wait to tip his hat.
Well, I'm just telling you what Pete himself said.
Yeah, well, he can say whatever he wants. Pete's, you know,
Pete
my guy.
Pete himself said, the umpire told me, so what do you mean, why should I tip my cap? Yeah, basically, is what paraphrasing.
Yeah, I think that's not true.
But he was more, it was about him being in the zone about the at-bat.
Yeah, I don't think that's true.
Either way, it was a lovely moment.
I'm just telling you right now, I don't think that was true.
Did you shed any tears?
No, and I'll tell you why. A couple of things. First of all, I don't believe that story because that's not what I saw. What I saw, that's not what I saw.
Believe the guy. Okay.
No, I was staring at the guy.
All right.
I was sitting like literally, I'm not even kidding, 12 feet away from him.
Evan, I stared at him
as he came to the plate, and it appeared as if he was taking his helmet off before, and I'm not ripping him. I'm merely telling you what I saw. It looked like a guy who could not wait
This is a new low for you.
Why is it a new low?
That you know more about what Pete Alonso was thinking than what Pete Alonso himself was thinking about himself.
I'm saying, no. I'm saying what Pete's story doesn't check out to what I saw.
Okay.
And again, maybe what I saw is what I wanted to see. Maybe it was fan fiction. I don't know. I'm just describing what I saw. I was there last night. And what I saw was a guy who could not wait to tip his hat. And I don't have a problem with that. Pete loves us, and I love him. I want Pete to be a Met forever, but I also want him to perform. And he struck out his first few at-bats.
Yep.
Now, he did make a great defensive play in this game, which should not be ignored, ending the sixth inning against Bryson Stott. Headlong dive. Yep. Good play on the sprint training play to first base. It was a great play. And that should not be ignored, because I think too many people ignore Pete's defense and how good it's been, especially recently. But offensively, he looked like he was pressing. And what I would say to Pete... is, you, dude, you got to relax. We love you. Most of us love you. Most of us want you back. But most of us want you to hit. You have demons in Atlanta, too. We all do. And what you need to do is exercise them. So forget free agency. Forget the adulation of Met fans. We love you. But now is big boy time. Now is the time to perform. And I felt personally like Pete was pressing a little bit too much yesterday, specifically based on how we treated him. And that's not to blame us. Like, yeah. I cheered him too. I love Pete. I'd love to have him back. I don't want him going anywhere else. I mean, obviously, Juan Soto, that'll maybe change the equation. But look, I'm just being honest.
It's fine.
So he needs to perform because they need him. They need him badly, especially these three games coming up in Atlanta.
All right. So if you had to predict right now, was that the last time we saw Pete Alonso in a Met uniform Citi Field?
No.
I agree with you.
Now, you didn't ask me when I'm going to see him again. It may be in March.
I think divisional round, but that's me.
I've always felt that he would end up back here. So I'm not, and I'm also not thinking about it, I swear to you.
Right.
Like, I'm so focused on this team right now and this postseason run and if they could make the playoffs. And I'm not overthinking free agency. But if you ask me right now, do I think I see him at Citi Field again? I do. I really do.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah. Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.